Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Jared Diamond's first foray into illustrated young adult nonfiction is both an explosive indictment of human nature and a hopeful case for better survival. The book is The Third Chimpanzee for Young People, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Jared Diamond back to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us, sir. A great pleasure.
It's a pleasure to be talking with you today.
Jared Diamond is a professor of geography at the University of California. He is the author of several books, including Guns, Germs, and Steel, which was awarded the Pulitzer Prize. His other books include The World Until Yesterday, What Can We Learn from Traditional Societies? And again, the new book is The Third Chimpanzee for Young People. What led you to write this for young people?
Well, originally I had published it for adults 20 years ago, and because the material is complicated, although interesting, it didn't occur to me that it would get read in schools until one day my own sons came home from middle school angry at me because they said my book had been assigned to their class and they hadn't read it, but they knew that it was a bad book without reading it. And most embarrassing, I had been called into their class by their teacher to talk to their classmates. Well, I did talk to their classmates, and my sons gradually loosened up when they saw that their classmates loved the material. And then I found that whenever I talk about my book in public, there are always classes from middle schools and high schools. So that's what gave the idea that perhaps an edition targeted specifically at younger people by being shorter and defining terms more carefully might have wide appeal.
And ultimately, you want to, of looking at this, of what makes us human, right? That's of what is it about us that is different that makes us human?
That's right. Just to put numbers on it, you and I share almost 99% of our genes with chimpanzees, and yet you and I are talking to each other, and we've locked the chimps up in cages in zoos, whereas the chimpanzees are not talking to each other, and they haven't locked us up. What is there in 1% of our genes that explains why you and I are doing these things and chimpanzees are not? That's one of the great questions of science, and it's what stimulated me to write The Third Chimpanzee.
You state in the introduction to the book that you started out being a doctor, but all of this kind of slowly evolved over time.
That's right. In fact, I didn't make it to being a doctor. I started out pre-med. My father had been a doctor, and so I thought I would go to medical school. But in my last year in college, I realized that I was more interested in the fascination of how the world works than in being a doctor. And so I did a PhD in laboratory physiology and became world's expert on gallbladder sodium transport. But I developed a side career on New Guinea birds, and that eventually evolved, particularly after my own kids were born, into writing books for a broad public about the problems facing the world.
And when you look at this book, it is not so much the problems, but what we stand to lose.
What we stand to lose and what we stand to gain if we fix what we stand to lose. What we stand to lose consists of all those problems that people talk about, the destruction of forests and fisheries and soil, running out of fresh water, climate change, all those things that will make the world a world not worth living in 30, 40 years from now if we stay on our present course. But if we fix those things, then we have a happy future for the indefinite years to come.
You do this and you tell this story through evolutionary biology, and ultimately in introducing this concept to young people, and even in your book for adults, of having us understand of what that is and how it affects so many different things.
Sure. Evolutionary biology is basically the account of how living creatures got to be the way they are. Living creatures were not dropped on the surface of the earth fully formed 6,000 years ago. They evolved, and it took 4 billion years for them to evolve. They evolved under the influence of natural selection. Some creatures survive better than others. They evolved under the influence of sexual selection. Some creatures attract mates more successfully than others. And those are the forces that shaped us and chimpanzees and bacteria. So that, for example, if you go into the hospital and you're worried, as you should be worried, about getting sick from a organism that has evolved resistance to antibiotics, that organism evolved resistance within the last decade or two. It didn't get created with resistance to antibiotics. That's why we need to understand evolution.
What do you think it is that, as you say, you wrote this book 20 years ago. I assume at 20 years ago there was a hope that people would get it.
Yes. So increasing numbers of people have gotten it. As an example of the it that people have gotten, climate change. 4 or 5 years ago, the great majority of Americans were skeptical about climate change.
Right.
Today, the estimates of Americans skeptical about climate change range from a little under 50% to maybe 30%. That's to say, within the last few years, Americans have recognized what's happening to their rain and their temperatures and their storms, and they get climate change. Similarly, I think increasing numbers of Americans recognize where animals and plants came from, just as large numbers of Americans already know that the Earth goes around the sun and the sun doesn't go around the Earth.
You have a fascinating chapter in the book about extinction, and it's scary because you realize that we're never all that far away from that.
Just as an example, sitting on my desk at the moment, I'm looking at a book on the passenger pigeon, which used to be the most abundant bird species in North America, one of the most abundant in the world, billions and billions and billions of individuals. And within 10 years, from 1872 to 1882, the numbers crashed due entirely to overhunting, and the last individual died in the Cincinnati Zoo around 1911. Well, that's the passenger pigeon. One might say, well, who cares about the passenger pigeon? On the other hand, the passenger pigeon was important in establishing forests all over the United States, and people certainly care about the fish species that we eat and the tree species that provide our wood and paper and all of the microorganisms and plants that give us fresh air and fresh water.
You have the final section of the book, part five of the book is Reversing Our Progress Overnight, and as you write, the bad news is that as the rest of the book shows, is that we are now reversing our progress much more rapidly than we created it. Our power threatens our own existence. Will we suddenly blow ourselves up or sink slowly into a stew of global warming, pollution, more mouths to feed with less food, and the loss of species we need to survive? And all of that, even though the tide is turning a little bit, there is that question that comes up, is it too little too late?
There is that question. When people ask me, Jared, are you an optimist or a pessimist? It goes up and down with time, but on the average, I would say I'm an optimist. More specifically, I'm a cautious optimist. By cautious optimist, I mean that it's not guaranteed that we're going to come out okay. Instead, we have problems, but we have a chance to solve the problems because we made all the significant problems that we're facing, and so it's in our power to stop making the problems. I would rate our chances about 51% that we come out okay and about 49% that we mess up irreversibly.
So for kids, young people reading this book and in the final chapters of it, you telling them how they can make a difference and ultimately reverse this, do obviously it's a long row to hoe.
It is a long road, but young people can start right now. For example, many young people in high school, they're not that much short of voting age. Some may already be up to voting age. You can go out and vote. It's astonishing how many Americans don't vote. Our turnout for presidential elections is only about 60%. And here in Los Angeles, where I live, only 20% of Los Angeles voters could be bothered to vote for mayor of one of the biggest cities in the United States. So if our government is making a mess, it's our own fault. That's a simple thing that young people can do. And another thing that young people can do is start asking their parents questions. Mommy and Daddy, what did you do in your business today? Are you interested in environmental issues? What? You're not taking the environment seriously? What? You're poo-pooing it as green, tree-hugging nonsense? Mommy, I hate you. That really gets the attention of parents.
Yeah, I hate you seems to work, doesn't it?
It certainly does.
Would you, in the stories that you tell, you know, I think of one of my favorite book I think that you've written is Collapse. And I wonder if, you know, is obviously that's a story that should be told to children as well.
Yes, yes. And now that the third chimpanzee, the first of my books, has come out in an edition for young people, naturally shameless authors, hope for the best, and I'd hope that maybe someday Collapse and Guns, Germs, and Steel will come out for young people. But you young people, you don't have to wait. There are lots of high school and middle school classes that are already reading Collapse and Guns, Germs, and Steel. But I'm glad that an edition of Third Chimpanzee has come out tailored for young people, taking the time to make definitions and making things a little shorter. And then also young people will be pleased to hear that the adult version of The Third Chimpanzee had three chapters on sex, but I have tastefully reduced those chapters to only one chapter on sex in the current version for young people. On the other hand, that one chapter does tell young people how to pick their mates and sex partners, so I think young people will still find it interesting.
Indeed. I was curious as to, and I guess this gets back to the optimism question or a riff on it, but when you look at the work that you've done, do you feel that you've made a difference in writing this and these dispatches of what is happening and what has happened in our world?
I know that I've made a difference. And I say that not as a matter of boasting or pride, but it's the case that whenever I give a talk, many people come up to me, particularly younger people, and say that my book impelled them to choose careers in science or in the environment. Two of my books, Guns, Germs, Steel, and Collapse, have been turned into documentary and documentary videos, which lots of people have seen. My books are now translated into 38 languages around the world, including Mongolian and Estonian. So, yes, people really are interested in these matters, and they're interested in reading about them in clear terms that they can understand rather than in scientific rigmarole.
The new book is The Third Chimpanzee for Young People, and it is published by Triangle Square Books from Seven Stories Press. Jared Diamond, thank you so much for sharing with us. I do appreciate it as always.
It's a pleasure to talk with you today.
Thank you very much. Again, the title of the book, The Third Chimpanzee for Young People, published by Seven Stories Press. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.